comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotek Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotek Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 54 for November 8, 2010. This is Michael Off.
I'm Ricky Inger.
Ricky, I don't know about you, but I'm very excited and want to give special thanks to Damon Rose over with the BBC for including Serotalk in a recent blog post of five top podcasts having to do with access technology.
Yes, this is very cool. I'm very proud to be a part of this group. We're in good company for sure. There is the
Accessibility
Roundtable. And Tech Access Weekly from Aaron and Rodney Edgar, and also have
Ability Tech Net for All, which is a UK-based podcast, as well as the infamous Blind Cool Tech.
Yes, indeed.
So also we want to invite folks to listen to Tech Chats 76 with Peter Bosley and Richard Wells. They offer some great tips for PC security and optimizing Windows and much more. And in fact, we're going to play one segment that we didn't have time to cover there, where Richard Wells shows us, coming up later in the podcast, how to speed up your computer. Because I didn't know this, but when you install antivirus software, one thing it is constantly doing is scanning your screen reader directories. And of course, those files are written to quite a lot. So by excluding them in your antivirus software, it speeds up your system. And we're also going to show you how, once and for all, to make sure that your Windows 7 box will work and bring up System Access once you insert that U3 thumb drive. So all that coming up. Also, we invite you to check out Tech Chat 75 with Curtis Chong from the Iowa Department for the Blind and Jim Fruchterman, as they give their unique perspectives on October news, the latest developments in access technology. Well, you know, Ricky, one of the things I'm very excited about are when new folks enter the arena of podcasting. And I'd like to believe that we are in some small part responsible for that by giving encouragement and tips to some folks. And lately, first off, the blindaccessjournal.com with Daryl Shandro and others are beginning to submit posts on various iPhone applications, kind of a follow-up on all their work, their contributions to applevis.com. Corey Ballard has started a podcast as well called All With My iPhone, and he describes it as audio tours of apps for your iOS devices.
It's good to hear some new voices doing these things. As you say, it's always nice to have other people contributing, and certainly some very quality information in both those podcasts.
Yeah, you can never have too much information or too many folks out there, because even if we cover the same topics, we bring unique perspectives to it. It all really comes down to an issue of time. You know, how much can we listen to? But we welcome all of these great folks into the arena. We have links to those items and all stories we talk about at Serotalk.com. First off, in cell phone news, Kevin Chow has posted his review of the iOS 4.2, specifically some voiceover new fixed and change list is what he calls it, which I don't quite know how that works, because normally people who review those are under an NDA not to talk about it. But anyway, that we'll leave that for someone else to deal with. It looks like speech rate can be changed in the rotor. Looks like you can crank it up again to 100%. So go ahead and say it, Ricky.
Yay! I really am excited about that. I'm tired of being at 70 or 80%.
Yeah. Oh, apparently, though, it looks like the UK and Australia may have breakup with the speech once you get between 70 and 100%. So we'll see how that works for them.
I think that's always been the case. I think they've had difficulty pronouncing the letters E and I and some other things. The speech synth tends to kind of swallow those. So I don't know if that's new.
So it looks like there's a sliding ring silent switch. VoiceOver says muting and unmuting. It now moves in speech increments of 5%. So maybe you don't want 100, but maybe 95 or 85. You have a little more functionality there. Says the keyboard is more responsive and does not require as much pressure when entering characters, so that can be done much more quickly.
Now, this is interesting because he is testing this on an iPhone 3GS, I believe, and I'm wondering if what he's seeing now is the sort of responsiveness increase that I noticed when I moved from the 3GS hardware to the iPhone 4.
That's interesting you mention that, because there's a woman out in California who is suing Apple, claiming that they are making some of the 3GS units bricks, meaning basically disabling the phone, so that people will be forced to upgrade to the new iPhone 4. And I don't know anyone personally who has not been able to use their 3GS. So I'm not sure how much merit that case has, but apparently she and a few others, and she's trying to create a class action lawsuit on that matter.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I'm not clear on which features she was talking about. I don't think the phone was disabled entirely, but it did seem to be very sluggish for some people. There were some performance problems, and although I never experienced it myself, credible people have mentioned it, so we'll have to see where this goes.
A new blog post is entitled 10 Tips to Improve the State of Assistive Technology. One of their first suggestions was for AT companies to utilize cloud computing. Did you have any comments on this article?
I just wanted to say that all of these suggestions are good ones. They talk about being a big part of social networking. They also talked about being very willing to share your views on assistive technology companies, because as consumers, we tend to do this for other things. And by word of mouth, we say, no, no, don't get this. It's bad. Or this is fantastic. Go out and get it. The same should be true for AT companies. I think they're absolutely right. And then they had some other tips, like try and get used AT, because it can often be very expensive when you purchase it new. Just be careful to buy, sell, or trade with people that you trust to some degree. But definitely well worth the read.
NASA has launched intern opportunities for blind and disabled students. I don't quite know how that works. Like, if you have to go to one of their centers in Florida or California or whatever. But anyway, persons interested in that can apply now through the end of February 2011. The website is intern.nasa.gov, or get the link at serotalk.com. Any thoughts on this one, Ricky? German researchers have created a new eye implant that may allow as many as 200,000 people to see once again. Primarily designed for people with RP, retinitis pigmentosa, it involves a chip that's implanted in the eye, and from one spec I saw, it's actually embedded into a tooth, which in turn is embedded in the eye.
Yeah, there's definitely something a bit creepy about having a tooth embedded in your eye, but with that said, this appears to be actually functional in the tests that they've done. Now, they're far from being able to do this in mass production, but it looks like we're making quite a few advancements in at least restoring sight to people who lose it for various reasons. And that's exciting for people who sort of want to investigate that. I don't really hold out a whole lot of hope for those who were born totally blind and the visual cortex of the brain has been trained to function a bit differently. I don't know if we'll be able to restore sight to those folks, but for people who have lost it due to degenerative diseases and so on, things are looking good.
Alina Roberts wrote a very thought-provoking article that was recently posted in Matilda Ziegler magazine on the financial cost of owning a guide dog and what happens if your dog needs major surgery. And she offers some great tips.
You know, this is very interesting because I think that I'm a lot like most people in that the financial cost of the dog was not the first thing that I thought of when trying to make the decision. I certainly did consider it, but I was more thinking about, will I be able to feed the dog every month? And will I be able to buy things like flea preventives and so on? And I decided I would be able to do that, but there are things that come up. In Alina's case, her dog needed a major surgery. That costs quite a lot. In my case, my dog seems to be prone to some ear infections. So I did have to do some research and find a vet who would give discounts for service animals. But with that said, there's still a cost associated with that, even with the discount. So it is something that I think people should consider more than they might currently. It's definitely something that needs to be thought about before you make that final decision to go for getting a dog.
Well, there's a base cost, right, that some have said allocate about $50 a month, just planning up between food and veterinary costs throughout the course of a year.
Right, exactly. And that doesn't seem like a whole lot when you just think about that. Most people can squeeze that into even a very tight budget. But when you think about shots, other veterinary visits, you know, those can be $80 a pop. And if the RFID tag on your dog happens to slide out and you've got to go get that replaced, that certainly costs some money.
Or I guess if the dog eats something they shouldn't.
Oh, yes. And that absolutely does happen. And then there are just things that, you know, dogs can have hip problems, or they can wake up with a health issue that you just never could have seen coming.
The FCC, Federal Communications Commission, wants help with a new access technology website. They want to start an online clearinghouse for technology applications for people with disabilities, and they want volunteers to help them. The FCC invited programmers today, November 8th, as we record this, to their Washington, D.C. headquarters location. And again, they are looking for people to write the spec on an application to display all of this information. Security firm Coverity has found 359 flaws with the recent version of the Android operating system. 88 of these flaws are labeled as high risk, and one-fourth, or about 22 of them, approximately, give or take a few, are considered so high risk that they could cause damage like data loss, system crashes, resource leaks, memory corruption, and memory illegal accesses, and much more. Now, they claim 359 overall is not bad compared with other operating systems. Apparently, open source equals open doors, as 45% of defects are considered high risk in open source software, and this has not changed since 2008. Google has been advised of these holes in the Android operating system and has until January to fix the issues, because either way, if not, they were going to be exposed to the masses.
I mean, I would think one security hole is one too many, but this number is considered to be pretty much industry standard.
People who work in security tell you there's always holes for the savvy cats out there.
Oh, of course.
And as we talked about in Tech Chat 76, if you worked in security and knew all of the holes and all the potential security risks out there, you'd probably live in paranoia, and some folks would probably even turn off their computer or get rid of that their internet and just do away with it.
Get off the grid.
The next iPhone 5 may enable a very ambitious remote computing program called NFC, which stands for Near Field Communications. This chip will enable your iPhone to be an electronic wallet and or security passkey. Already used in Asia, NFC is expected to really explode here in the U.S. in the next 3 to 5 years. Apple has already hired an NFC expert and has patented many technologies.
The way that this works is that you just wave your iPhone at a nearby Mac or something, and then all of your passwords and your personal configuration becomes a part of that Mac for the time that you're there. And then when you get out of range, the Mac reverts to its default state. Is that pretty much how it works?
Yeah, after authentication, it looks like you get bookmarks, passwords, a lot of personal data, your same settings, the even look of your original desktop on your Mac, preferences, contacts, mouse, keyboard settings, software licenses, and even passwords to Facebook and other websites you use on a regular basis.
So what happens if somebody happens to snatch your iPhone? That could be incredibly dangerous, I would think.
Indeed. I want to know what mechanisms are there to protect your security. And also, you know, they'd be looking at actually waving your iPhone, which could be things like going through toll bridges or going
right
through stores. And of course, Apple and both Google are looking at a company called Boku that can take payments, especially in countries where credit cards are less prevalent, like India.
Yeah, so basically, if you wanted to purchase something, it would just be added to your cell phone bill, and you'd pay that bill in the same way that you always had.
In countries where you don't have a credit card, it could be added to your cell phone bill, or could be a bridge or interface between your iTunes account, where you could then pay with the credit card that you specify.
Right, and they want to do this not just for things that you could get in the App Store or through Apple. They want to allow you to pay for other goods and services. You could just be walking in some random store and use your iPhone as a payment mechanism.
Ricky, I don't know if you've acquired the VLC media player for your iPhone 4, but it's a pretty cool little device. It plays a lot of media types. However, it's being speculated that this could end up being removed from the Apple Store due to licensing issues. Now, VLC has already lost their ability to support Shoutcast stations over licensing issues. And as someone pointed out to me after I posted on Twitter saying, get it now before it's removed from the store, someone said, well, it doesn't matter. I had an app before, a scanner application, that once Apple removed it from the store, the next time I did a update, it just disabled the app.
It was gone. Ouch.
That raises a whole issue there. That's probably what upsets a lot of people is the fact that I can have an app, I already have it installed, and you can decide later that I'm not allowed to use this anymore.
Yeah, it's a very interesting side effect of belonging to the Apple ecosystem. Things can change just like that, and there's not much you can do about it.
In screen reader news, it looks like the GNOME project is getting two whopping grants totaling $15,000. One specifically for enhancements to Orca, and the other for something called the eZoom component of CompiZ Fusion.
This is good news. I was kind of concerned that once Sun was purchased by Oracle, that Orca development would halt entirely. And I'm happy to see that that's not the case, and I'm happy to see that people are continuing to contribute code to the project as well as some financial backing.
Also on screen reader front, NVDA 2010.2 is released, and it's working great with Firefox, and it is a great resource for those who can live with the limitations of a free screen reader, but it is coming along very, very nicely. Again, the only one that I know working with Firefox Beta 4, I would certainly trust the official release will bring it back into spec with all other screen reading technologies. What I don't know about is its support for IE9, where that is. And you had some interesting thoughts on a new report that IE9 has the best HTML5 support. And for those who have no idea what HTML5 means, this is becoming a very viable alternative to Flash technology, which is developing even more security holes, slowing down computers left and right, actually takes 2 hours of battery life away from some Macs.
Ouch. That's not good performance-wise. You almost never hear about something that Internet Explorer does better than other browsers. I think that its popularity is really due to the fact that it's ubiquitous, it's everywhere. But consumers are getting more and more savvy, and they're becoming aware that there are other browsers out there, like Firefox and, of course, Chrome. We're up to version 9, I believe. But all of these browsers are really doing some interesting things, and I think that finally Microsoft really began to feel some competition, and they thought, well, you know, ubiquity isn't enough to keep us at the top anymore. Maybe we should actually do some improvements to the browser itself. And I think we're seeing that with things like HTML5 performance. So competition is definitely a good thing.
Yes, indeed. So that's all I have here from the wonderful world of news. We invite you to stay tuned for Richard Wells' great demo of how to speed up your computer, regardless of which screen reading technology you use. In our case, obviously, we show you how to do it with System Access, but how to speed up your computer by disabling antivirus software from regularly scanning the directories that contain your screen reading software. You know, because a lot of times we blame the screen reader for slowing down our computer, and really what's happening is it's constantly over and over again scanning the files that our screen reading software uses. Don't forget to join us November 18th for our live tech chat. I believe the number will be 78, where we will talk about online shopping for the holidays, where to find the deals, coupon codes, paying with a credit card, what happens if your items are lost or stolen or damaged because the couriers are throwing them up on the doorsteps, or you simply receive the wrong merchandise. Make sure to read the return and exchange policies, all that good stuff we will cover in Tech Chat 78 for November 18, 2010. And with that, Ricky, we going to get out of here, turn it over to Mr. Richard Wells, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Stay connected and stay directed.
Richard, you brought up a very good point before the show that we can really speed up our computers when using either Microsoft Security Essentials or the Sunbelt, actually now GFI, Viper by enabling a couple directories that System Access needs. That actually speeds up the performance, right?
You can always allow certain folders. And since both of these applications allow that, it's very easy to do. You just have to know where to go. That's the biggest problem. And I'm going to show you Microsoft Security Essentials first. And you can either access it from the system tray, or you can also run it from your desktop, which I'm actually focused on the desktop. I'll just go ahead and open it.
Microsoft Security Essentials. Scan now button. Alt S.
Okay, so what we want to do is we want to go to the area where you can change things. I'm just going to tab around until I find that.
Change my scan schedule. Home button.
Okay, we want to go to the home screen. It's not going to say anything there.
Quick. Radio button. Full. Radio button. Not selected. Custom. Radio button. Not selected. Scan now button. Alt S. Change my scan schedule. Link.
Change my scan schedule. And you press enter here.
List. Scheduled scan.
1 of 8.
Now you're in a list, so you want to down arrow to the one that says 4 of 8, and we're just going to down arrow to show you what we have here.
Default actions. Real-time protection. Excluded files and locations.
Excluded files and locations. This is where we want to go. Tab through here.
Files and locations can help speed up the scan, but may leave your computer less protected. List. Empty. Add. Button. Alta.
Now, we're on an add button. We're going to press spacebar or enter, either one you want to do.
Microsoft Security Essentials. Select the files or locations you want to exclude. 3. See local disk. Closed.
And as you can see, we have just a plain old tree view here. And so we're going to open the tree view with right arrow, just like you would do in any other tree view.
Open.
Now, this is an XP machine. One of the places that I need to allow is program files. I'm just going to type PRO. I'm going to read current line to make sure.
Program files closed.
Okay, so we're here. I'm going to open that.
Open. Synaptics. Closed. System access. Closed.
This is one of the directories we want to allow. And so we're going to tab over.
OK button. Alto. Microsoft Security Essentials. Add button. Alto.
We're back on the add button. We've added the first one. Now we're going to add another one.
Microsoft Security Essentials. Select the files or locations you want to exclude. 3. See local disk. Closed.
We're going to open. See again.
Open.
Now we're going to go. This time we're going to go to Documents and Settings. Vista and Windows 7 users will want to open the Users folder for this.
Documents and Settings. Closed. Open.
Now, what I'm looking for is my user directory. My user directory is called, strangely enough, Richard Wells. So we're going to go there. I'm just going to type RI.
Richard Wells. Closed. Open.
Now I'm going to type L for local settings.
Local settings. Closed. Open.
Open that one. Now I'm going to type, I'm going to down arrow once.
Application data. Closed.
Application data. That's where we're going.
Open.
Now we're going to go to System Access.
GDIPF. System Access. Closed.
Okay, here we are.
64 of 66.
And now that we are at System Access, we're going to tab over to OK again.
OK button. Alt. Microsoft Security Essentials. Add button. Alta.
OK, now we're going to tab over.
Remove button. Alta. Save changes button. Alta.
Now we're going to save changes.
List. Excluded files and locations.
To check this, we're just going to tab and we're going to see what we got here.
Files and locations can help speed up the scan, but may leave your computer less protected. List. C. / documents and settings / Richard Wells / local settings / application data / system access.
1 of 2.
C. / program files / system access.
And there you have it. We've added both of these locations for Microsoft Security Essentials. What we've done here is we've told Microsoft Security Essentials not to look at these two directories as it does Active Protection. It's not going to look at these directories anymore. That access speeds up everything that your computer does because your AT, whether it be JAWS, WindowEyes, System Access, NVDA, whatever, is always reading and writing from its directories. And so by excluding these directories, we've told our antivirus software, don't actively scan these directories. Don't always monitor these directories. Let them do their thing without interference.
So if you use other screen readers or additional screen readers, you can certainly go into Program Files or under Users and Windows 7 and Vista and add the appropriate directories.
You certainly could. You could do that with JAWS or WindowEyes or NVDA, any of your other AT that you use. Now, a quick note on Vista and 7, it gets a little trickier. You're going to open Users folder and then your name, if it's Michael Loff or whatever, Richard Wells, App Data, Local, System Access. If you're using a 64-bit operating system, Program Files, 386 is what you're going to be looking for if it's a 64-bit operating system. The Windows 7 or Vista. C, Users, Richard Wells, App Data, and then Local. Then we want to go to System Access. So that's your path.
Now, won't those be hidden by default? So users may need to show hidden.
That is a good point. You'll want to unhide those files. And this is something that a person might not want to do if you know without help unless they know what they're doing. Now, let's go ahead and go to our Viper icon on the other computer.
Viper antivirus, scan now button.
Now, this one is a little bit different. You don't have to tab around. To get to the Viper settings, we want to open the View menu.
View menu open. Overview submenu. Oh.
Now we want to down arrow.
Find malware submenu. F. Manage malware submenu. M.
Manage malware. We want to right arrow.
Menu open. Manage. M. Schedule scans. S.
I pressed up arrow because it's closer to get to it.
Always allowed. A.
Always allowed. This is where we want to go. Always allowed. Press enter.
Menu closed. Back button. Alt D. Manage malware button.
Okay, I press tab. It landed on the back button.
This list shows all the items that you want Viper to ignore. List empty.
Right now we have nothing added, so we're going to tab.
Add button. Alta.
With Viper, we're going to press the spacebar.
Add to always allow. Identify programs, files, or folders you want scans to ignore and active protection to allow. Select the method for manually adding an entry to the always allowed list. Allow file by full path. Wildcards okay. Radio button. Selected.
We don't want this one. We don't want to allow by wildcards. We want to find the one that says an entire folder. So you want to up arrow.
Allow an entire folder. Radio button. Selected.
1 of 4.
Okay, we pressed up arrow to get to that. We were landed on the second choice by default.
Editable text. Land.
We landed on an edit, so you can type the path name if you knew it, but we don't, so we're going to hit tab over.
Browse button. Alt D.
And a good old trusty browse button.
Browse for folder. Select folder to add. 3. Computer. Open. Local disk. C. Closed.
Now, I just said computer open, so I had to down arrow to get to the C drive. Right arrow.
Open.
Now I'm going to just go ahead and press PR, and that should have landed us on.
Program files. Closed.
And it did.
Open.
Now we're going to type SY.
System access. Closed.
Our system access folder. So now we tab over.
OK button.
And we press enter.
Add to always allow. Identify programs, files, or folders you want scans to ignore and active protection to allow. Select the method for manually adding an entry to the always allowed list. OK button.
Now let's press OK to actually add that one. We've browsed to it, but now we have to OK it so that we'll actually select it.
List. This list shows all the items that you want zipper to ignore. List. C. / program files / system access. Type. Folder. Date added. 11/4/2010/10:29 a.m. Added by user.
What I did is I just tabbed around until I found the list. So now we're going to add another one.
Details. Button. Alt D. Add. Button. Alt.
And now, we have a details button because we've added, we actually have one. Before we didn't have any.
Add to always allow. Identify programs, files, or folders you want scans to ignore and active protection to allow. Select the method for manually adding an entry to the always allowed list. Allow file by full path. Wildcards OK. Radio button. Selected.
Move forward. It comes to the wildcards instead of the full path, which is what we want. So we want to up arrow.
Allow an entire folder. Radio button. Selected. Editable text. Land. Browse button. Alt D.
And we want to browse.
Browse for folder. Select folder to add. 3. Computer. Open. 2. Local disk. C. Closed.
And of course, we want to open that with right arrow.
Open.
Now we want to go to Documents and Settings.
Documents and Settings. Closed. Open.
We want to go to Richard Wells. We want to go to your user folder first.
HP. Richard Wells. Closed. Open. Application data. Closed.
Application data is where we go next.
Open.
Now, System Access.
Ceratec RAM Client. System Access.
83 of 84.
And we're on System Access. Make sure we're by reading our current line.
System Access.
83 of 84.
Now we tab.
OK button. Add to always allow. Identify programs, files, or folders you want scans to ignore and active protection to allow. Select the method for manually adding an entry to the always allowed list. Browse button. Alt D.
Back to the browse button. So we want to tab to OK again to actually select what we've browsed to.
OK button. Zipper antivirus. This list shows all the items that you want zipper to ignore. List.
Go ahead and tab around to the actual list.
Select all button. Alt D. Enable disable button. Delete button. Alt D. Edit button. Alt. Add new button. Alt. Scan options button. Alt O. Back button. Alt D. Manage malware button. This list shows all the items that you want zipper to ignore. List.
OK, I'm going to down arrow.
C. / program files / system access. Type. Folder. Date added. 11/4/2010/10:29 a.m. Added by user.
One of two.
Now we have two instead of one. Down arrow again.
C. / documents and settings / Richard Wells / local settings / application data / system access. Type. Folder. Date added. 11/4/2010/10:32 a.m. Added by user.
Two of two.
So we just tab over.
Details button. Alt. Add button. Alt. Select all button. Alt. Delete from list button. Alt. Back button.
And we see that we don't have any more work to do here, so we can just press the back button and Alt F4 to leave the Viper interface. And that's really all there is to it. If you do need to unhide a folder,
computer.
All you have to do is go to your computer icon, open it by pressing enter.
Computer list empty.
Now you want to press Alt T for tools.
Tools menu open. Map network drive.
Press O for options.
Folder options. General tab. Task.
And now we want to do a control tab.
View tab. You can apply the view such as details or tiles that you are using for this folder to all folders. Folder views. Apply to all folders button. Alt L.
And you tab until you hear it say.
Reset all folders button. Alt R.
That's not the one.
Advanced settings. 3. Files and folders. Open.
Advanced settings. Now to get quickly to hidden folders, all you have to do is press the letter H.
Hidden files and folders. Open.
It moved straight to it. Now it's open, so all I have to do is press down arrow to see if it's on or off.
Do not show hidden files and folders off. Radio button. Not selected.
And 24. Mine says off, but yours is going to say on here, so you want to down arrow.
Show hidden files and folders on. Radio button. Selected.
To select that, all you have to do is press the space bar and then just tab over to OK. And that will unhide your folders so that you can see your folders to add them to Viper and to Microsoft Security Essentials.
So the only thing for folks to keep in mind is which operating system you are working on, because the paths are a little different between XP and Windows 7.
The folder structure would be different for Vista and for Windows 7. And it's going to be the same for both of those. It's going to be users and then the username and so on.
So, Richard, you're also going to show us U3 drives and how to make sure they come up working as fast as possible.
Yes, there is a way. U3 actually supplies a program that will run in the background all the time, and it will let you insert your U3 and it will just come up and work.
And again, this is for Vista and Windows 7?
Correct. And I may not have this one set up.
Welcome to the remote access manager. What would you like to do now? 1. Access this computer. 2. Open the remote incident. 3. Exit.
This one's running RIM as well, so we're going to go to...
1. Access this computer. Loading system access. Please wait. System access is ready. Magnification is off.
In your sys tray, you're going to look for something that says removable drive something.
Removable disk O button. Scan results are available button. Removable disk O button.
Okay, so we want removable disk O in this case. Press applications key or shift F10 if you don't have one of those. And sometimes it says something and sometimes it doesn't, so you can down arrow.
U3 launch pad.
U3 launch pad. That's what we want. So press enter.
Download programs button.
All right, we want to tab over to where it says settings.
Explore Drive-O button. Settings button.
Now we're going to press the space bar, and it's going to open. It opens a context menu.
Menu opened. U3 Launchpad settings.
And that's what we want. So your other choices are.
Program settings. U3 Launchpad settings.
Okay, so we want U3 Launchpad settings.
Taskbar. U3 Launchpad settings. Removable disk. Oh, language. Welcome to U3 Launchpad. U3 Smart Drive name. Information messages. Click here to reset all. Do not show again. Checkboxes. Close button.
Okay, so we want to tab.
Automatic updates button.
Tab again.
Auto run button.
Okay, auto run. This is where we want to go. So press the space bar.
Removable disk. Oh, auto run U3 Launchpad. The U3 Launchpad is currently set to automatically run when the U3 Smart Drive is inserted into a computer. Click the button below to disable auto run on drive insertion. To run the U3 Launchpad when auto run is disabled, double click on launch U3.x launcher. If the U3 Launchpad does not auto run on this computer when a U3 Smart Drive is inserted, you can install a small program on the computer to detect the insertion of a U3 Smart Drive and run the U3 Launchpad. Install launcher button.
All right, did you hear it say install launcher? What this does, if you press the space bar on this button, it will actually install a program on your computer. And this is very highly recommended in the cases of Vista and Windows 7. XP should run okay without it, unless you have downloaded that patch from Microsoft that disables auto run. It simply installs this little program. We'll just go ahead and do that now. I press the space bar. Okay, it didn't say anything, so we're going to see where we are.
U3 launch put settings. Close button. Remove launcher button.
Now, instead of saying install launcher, now it says remove launcher. So you can install and remove this thing.
Not necessary for XP, but definitely helps Vista and most definitely Windows 7.
This program will always run on your computer. It won't take up enough system resources to amount to anything. So if you have a computer that you use often for your U3, install this little program and nobody will ever notice it. You just insert your U3 and it will run automatically when you insert your U3.
And that will ensure from that point forward that that computer will automatically run System Access.
Regardless of your auto run settings anywhere else.
There you go. Now you can make sure it comes up speaking loudly and proudly every time you insert it in your Windows 7 machine.
You got it.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.